This is Barbara Glickstein with HealthCetera in the Catskills. Dr. Judith R. Smith is a clinical social worker and researcher. She is a professor emerita at Fordham University School of Social Service. It's not the first time Dr. Smith has joined me here on HealthCetera. And back in February of 2022, her book, Difficult, Mothering Challenging Adult Children Through Conflict and Change, was released. Dr. Smith returns to HealthCetera today to discuss the impact of her book and what I see as a void that her work is filling, as she has recently launched a series of support groups for these parents. Welcome back to HealthCetera, Dr. Smith.
Thanks for inviting me, and very nice to be here.
So we have had multiple discussions here on HealthCetera. I'm remembering a program we did around Thanksgiving one year, and how not only are adult children difficult, but sometimes parents are. But today we're going to talk about, since the release of your book, what has happened, the reaction. I know you've had considerable media coverage on this issue, and it has, in fact, raised a lot of questions and actually allowed a number of these adult parents and mothers to step forth and reach out to you on social media, on your website, and you have now reached back to them. First, tell us what you mean by difficult adult children, for those of you who are not familiar with your work and with this book.
Well, what I discovered, I started a research project because I realized there were very little written about what are the challenges of being a mother of an adult child. You know, we have, when we used to have bookstores, many, many, many books on parenting young babies, parenting toddlers, some books on adolescents, but very few books on adult children. And myself, as a parent, when my son reached the launching age, I realized my job was not over. I was still very engaged, had questions, and I wanted to know what my colleagues and what the popular media were talking about. So I did a research project to find out from moms themselves what were the issues that emerged and how did things change as our adult kids grow, because we have adult children for 60 or 70 years, where we only have babies for 2 years or 3 years. Anyway, what I was surprised, I went to senior centers, I went to retiree, I was only interested in talking to older parents, people over 60, and I wanted them to tell me what were some of the issues that were difficult for them. I wanted to know what, and I was looking just at moms. I know moms, fathers were affected by their kids' problems, but I wanted to hear the perspective of mothers, because I believe that parenting is experienced differently by men than women. So women, when I went to a senior center, people came forward who were willing to talk to me about that they were having troubles with their adult kids. And what I learned, and I had no idea this would be true, is that the parents who were having the most trouble had adult children who had serious mental illness or a substance use disorder. And many of these kids, so-called kids, they could be 30, 40, 50 years old, had returned home, at least temporarily. And there was enormous tension in the house. And the mothers were feeling helpless. They wanted to provide support and protection, but the adult children's illnesses and own depressions made it very difficult to really have a reciprocal relationship. And what I kept hearing, and I'm a qualitative researcher, is that this situation was really difficult. And I didn't really mean to say these are difficult kids, but the situation of mothering a child who has serious mental illness or substance use disorder, who can't support themselves, is back home and is furious about that, or may just be homeless or living not, you know, it's a difficult situation because the mothers want to help as much as they can. And so it's difficult mothering, and it's a difficult adult child who needs support but is not feeling thrilled to have to be dependent on their parents again.
And as a clinical social worker, as well as this conversation making me recognize that not only is there continued serious stigma for those suffering with the mental illness, but you also uncovered the stigma these mothers were feeling. Were your questions with them for your study also revelatory for them to be able to speak to someone about this? Was this one of the first times someone actually took the time, although it was for your research, to ask them these questions about how difficult it was?
Absolutely. I mean, what I heard over and over again as I was doing the interview was a sigh of relief that they could openly talk to someone about the struggles they had and the worries they had, and that I was not judging them and I was interested in what their reactions were. I wasn't just trying to find out how to fix their child, but really finding out what it was like to be the mom of a child who was struggling.
And so you decided to write a book based on what your findings were, as well as a considerable amount of investigative research that you did in order to be informed about ways you might in fact support this community of mothers, which covered not a pretty good range of people from different backgrounds, ethnicities, social status, social economic status. I know that at some point, having known you and your work for a while, I mentioned to some of my friends who are living that situation whether they'd be interested in being interviewed, and they were too embarrassed to admit that. And these are social friends who have difficult adult children who are not able to be, if you will, launched out of the home, who are unemployed, have mental health issues, some who have had history of substance use, and their parents are very embarrassed by this. And so what has your book done for this community?
Well, I think my book is not written for parents, it's really written for mothers. And I think there's a unique kind of stigma for women, because I think women really and believe as mothers that we ought to be able to, if we do everything right, if we eat the right food, if we have the right childbirth experience, if we find the right school, everything's going to turn out all right. And I think when our kids have serious problems, women, mothers feel incredibly as if they have failed. And I think it's a double stigma. Not only are you living with enormous tension at home, but there's a sense and an assumption that people are really going to blame you and think you have failed in your job as mothers. And there's a lot of research. My field is partially to blame for this, that there's a lot of mother blaming that has gone on in the fields of psychology and social work, and that women have internalized the sense that a good mother is completely selfless, completely able to make her needs in sync with her kids, and anything other than that is a bad mother and perhaps causing her child's drug problems, mental illness, learning problems, whatever it may be.
And give an example of some of those ways that the mental health provider community, the psychology, psychiatry, and social work have created that kind of sense for women who are mothers. What are some of the examples that you can give our listeners?
I mean, the horrible history of autism was assumed to be you were a refrigerator mother, that the reason children were autistic was because the mothers were cold. And this was a fact in the psychiatry books. We now know that's absolutely not true. Autism is a neurological disease, but this was presented as fact. Even being able to have a vaginal birth, I mean, all of the ways we're supposed to be able to, I mean, women have huge depression if they're not able to give birth in the way they hoped, and fear that they will not be able to connect to their child if they've had to use medication or other things. And so that's starting from birth. And then if your kid starts having problems with learning in school and just the sense of failure and helplessness and shame is what I learned from all the moms that I talked to.
So your book is now being used in many ways, both in the clinical world for your colleagues, and more importantly, perhaps, which I know is why you published the work and did the book, was to support these mothers. So what's happened since then, and what are you doing in these early stages of just 16 months since the book has been published? What kind of feedback have you gotten? And as a result, tell us some about the groups that you have formed, that you are running support groups.
Well, right from the beginning, when the book was written about in the New York Times, I started getting letters as people started reading the book from moms saying, oh my God, this is the first time anybody has ever written about my experience. And I was getting these letters all the time. And I wrote the book specifically for mothers. This is not a professional book. I felt like I wanted to expand the knowledge to the people who needed it. And then I started to do webinars, just sort of sharing some of the information. And the first time I did a webinar, and in a webinar, people can't see each other. They can see me, but I couldn't see them. They could chat to me. I spoke for half an hour, and then people were writing questions. And you could feel in the webinar the relief that the mothers felt having other people on the webinar who had a similar experience. And people in the very first webinar said, can we have a group? We need a group. Because people feel so isolated and feel as if they're the only one in the world who is suffering in this way. And so I then decided to run some support groups. And I let people know through my Facebook page, that's Difficult Mothering, and through my website. And people signed up for the groups, and I now have run three groups, and it's a very powerful experience. Each time I start a new group, first of all, each woman's openness and willingness to talk about things she has not shared with anyone else. People don't talk to their own families about how hard this is. They certainly don't talk to the moms that they raise their kids with because they feel ashamed. And the sense of relief that in each group is expressed in a different way, and each woman expresses it in a different way, but the feeling of suddenly realizing this is not because you've been a bad mom. This is about how hard it is to be the mother of a child who has a mental illness or has a serious drug problem that is interfering with their ability to function. One mom in particular was describing to me how when her kids started developing problems, she was so bereft, but her husband wasn't. And she felt like something's wrong with me, that I am so bothered by this. I am so preoccupied by this. He's doing fine. He's doing his career. What is wrong with me? And here she was, you know, she was 70 years old, and it's the first time sitting, and it's a virtual group, so it's virtually sitting with other people and feeling, this is not about my being a failure or my being a bad mother. This is about how hard it is to care for and want to help a child who has serious limitations, and in a world where our mental health system is just not working for so many families. And the sense of relief of, I mean, every mother says how glad they are to be there, and then they feel a little guilty. It's not like I want to relish in that you're suffering the way I am, but I think there's something about seeing that other people, this is a real problem that's not about you. That mental illness and substance use disorder really derail our children's lives. And we are not yet in a place where we have service systems that are providing the adequate care. And families are left with a terrible decision of whether to continue to live with a child who's disrespectful, who's violent. I mean, most people don't know that what we call elder abuse is often an adult child who's living at home lashing out at their own parents. And it's a horrible feeling to have your own child attack you. and you certainly don't want to tell anyone, and you don't want to call the police because you don't want your neighbors to see that you are having your child taken out by the police. But the dilemma that every parent lives with in terms of, I can't fix this, and what's wrong, and how do I do this? But there is the relief that I am seeing the women are feeling by being in these groups is quite powerful. And I think there's a sense of safety because I am a clinical social worker. I am the leader of the group. It's not a peer group. I know NAMI, National Association of Mental Illness, runs some very effective family-to-family courses. I think what's different about the groups that I'm running is just women. So it's, I think there's something very helpful about women being able to acknowledge how invested they feel in their kids and not feel judged for that. Mm-hmm. Not feeling like they're enabling their kids, not feeling like they're babying their kids. That to be able to see it in the other women in the group that as a mother, we want to protect our kids. I mean, that is our job. We're also supposed to launch them. We have two jobs that go against each other. But when our kids have problems that are in the way of their launching it, what is a mother supposed to do? And all the women who've come to this group have been living with this dilemma in a very isolated way. And I think as your kids' problems mount, you become more and more isolated. And that becomes, one, dangerous and extremely lonely. And you turn all your worrying against yourself as if, what have I done to bring on this situation?
And you mentioned to me that the book and the chapters of the book help lead some of the discussions. So in the most recent group, what was that chapter? And just give us obviously with protecting the privacy of your community group, the support group, what was the topic and what was some of the response to the topic?
Well, today we're already like 6 weeks into the group. The chapter was chronic sorrow.
What do you mean by that?
Chronic sorrow was first used by a social worker, actually, named working with parents who had young children who had Down syndrome and seeing the grief that these parents were feeling. And really, chronic sorrow is a term that was developed by a social worker who was working, this is back in the 50s, with families who had kids who had Down syndrome. And he was helping other clinicians to recognize that we had to help these families to grieve. But what I heard as I talked to the moms, they were telling me how they were grieving for the person that their child was not going to become. That when mental illness derails a young person's life, often it happens when kids are 17, 18, or 19. They can be the smartest, most athletic, fully engaged, and the mental illness just really undoes them. And but the idea of chronic sorrow when you have a difficult adult child is different than grief, let's say. When you lose somebody, we have rituals for how we grieve. We have the community that gathers around the person who's grieving. There's a sense that after, within a year, that you begin to adjust to the loss. But this is what one sociologist called ambiguous loss, because the person's not gone. They're still there, but they're not the person, they're not the child that you had all the dreams about, that you imagined living all the life cycle accomplishments of having children, having grandchildren for yourself. One mom talked about that she just had gone to a baby shower for the one of the kids who she was in a mommy group with for 20 years, and realizing her son, she is not going to become a grandmother. And also how painful it was, as because not everybody there knew her situation, for people to come up to her and say, "So, you know, how are your boys?" And how do you answer that? And what she tried to do is to say, "How are you?" I mean, to shift it. I mean, I think that's something we so easily say, "How are the kids?" But this mom is doing okay. She lives with an enormous sorrow, but she's also really working to have a fuller life for herself. But the sorrow is, it catches you at moments. And one mom says how she can't bear to look at photographs for when her son was young, because to see the healthy child is too painful for her. Whereas other moms were at a place where they really welcomed looking at the old photographs, that they were really pleased that they had had those years where things were really good, and they want to hold on to them and celebrate those.
We have just another minute or two left, Dr. Smith, and I know that we have listeners who either are in this situation themselves or know a friend, a family member. I certainly, as I mentioned a moment ago, I do. And to help support them, can you share how people can learn more about your book and also about the potential of joining in one of these community support groups?
Sure. Well, the book is easy to find on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever you buy books. It's just called Difficult: Mothering Challenging Adult Children Through Conflict and Change. And there's also an audiobook, and the paperback will be coming out soon. In terms of joining the groups, there's two ways to be in touch with me. I'm on Facebook under Difficult Mothering, and you can follow me there. But the best way is to come to my website or write me a personal email at judithrsmith@difficultmothering.com. And the website is difficultmothering.com.
Thank you for coming back on to HealthCetera, Dr. Smith. And for those who are listening who want to make a difference in the lives of your own life and or the lives of people that you love who are facing this kind of struggle, there are ways to get some support and in the opportunity to begin on a path of feeling that they're not invisible and that there are ways that maybe we can't solve all of the problems facing this community, but in fact, at least feel supported. This is Barbara Glickstein with HealthCetera in the Catskills.